Okay, this is April 5th, 1982, and we're talking to Goodwin Semekin in Caltag, and this is tape three for today. And we had just been talking about when he was first married and out trapping. And I thought maybe we could talk a little bit more about, we just started, you were saying that your camp was 22 miles, is it 22 miles from downriver?
Downriver, from Caltech.
So maybe you could describe what the camp was like there and how you would get ready to go out to the trap line.
Well, when I was raised down there, you know, my dad and my mother used to have a camp there. Mostly all summer long, we used to spend our time in there. Then I kind of finally quit the place. For quite a long time, and none of my brothers were using it. You know, the commercial fishing came up 5 years, 6 years ago. And then, I know it's a good place. It's a good place for fishing. So me and my wife, we started to go down there and put in fish nets, you know, kind of open up the place again. And then we put in fish net, and then I used to haul the fish up here. But later on, then the commercial fishing came up, and then we got a commercial fishing license, so we just made a camp again down there. Made a camp again down there and started to go fishing down there. It's a good spot for fishing.
Did you have a cabin there?
I never had no cabin there, but a couple of years ago, I made a frame building there, and then I put up a smokehouse. I did that all in one summer, you know. I put a frame building and put a smokehouse there. And then the native, my wife got native allotment there, he got 80 acres there. Well, there was no place to go fishing for king salmon, and it was only the spot that we could think of for king salmon. Before the drifting, they started allow drifting for king salmon here.
When did they do that?
2 years ago. Okay, before that, we couldn't get, we were lucky if we get one or two king salmon. And last summer, I got about 8 or 10 king salmon from a drifting net, you know. Well, nobody else could ever get king salmon around here. Till it was legal to go drifting with fishnet. And we talked to the Fish and Wildlife quite a long time. And the one that did it was my niece, Merlin Ismailka, was the one that really talked first. You know, he even went down Anchorage and talked to the board there. And finally they made it legal for us to go drifting for king salmon. But that's all though, not the dog salmon or silver. We never go drifting for that, because we can catch that mostly anywhere.
Can't catch king salmon?
You gotta have a good certain spot for king salmon.
So there's not really many eddies around?
There's no eddies around. Well, there eddies around here are not big enough for king salmon, you know, for catching king salmon. And down at 22 miles from my camp, there's a big eddy there. Now we thought we were doing pretty good. Sometimes we get about 10 or 12 a day, me and my wife, you know. And we thought we were doing pretty good, so we decided to make a camp there. But instead, we never caught fish. I haul it up here, and then she cut it up here, because I was telling you that I was working, you know, at that time. I was working for the PHS at that time, so she didn't want to stay down there alone. So she was scared to stay out in a camp alone. So I just all the fish up for her, and then she caught it here.
So were any of your children helping then?
My children, they were small that time. You know. They were not, some of them was out firefighting too, you know. So anyway, I'd never tell my boys to do anything. I think that I could do. You know. I'd rather go there and do it with them and show them. You know. And if they go alone and then if they don't do things right, well, they never do things right. And it's just an extra work for me. And if I go with them and tell them what to do, then that's only the way they do anything right.
So what other kind of fishing did you do, or you and your wife do, throughout the year?
Well, we do some under ice fishing across here during the winter. And that's about all the fishing in the summertime.
Is there a special place across there? I notice all the sticks. It's awesome to be a mm-hmm. place.
Yeah, there's a special place across here that us people here in Caltech go, we'll eat fish all year round. We're about the luckiest one, I guess, to have fresh fish all year round. Besides the Eskimos, you can go down to the coast, I mean, go down to the bay, you know, and get all the fresh fish they want, and, you know, whenever they're hungry, fresh fish. And then they can go up to out here in Unalakleet, you can go up the Unalakleet River and catch some trout up there, you know, with hooks. At most any time you want fresh fish, you know.
So, what is special about the place across here that you catch fish?
There's a pretty good question there. I do not know what's special about it. You know, but it seems like it just makes a big lagoon, like, you know, the upper end, it's, I mean, the bar goes all the way across to the main island, from this island to the mainland, you know. And then it just puts a big open dead water place, so the fish goes in there and then just goes around and then come out, I think. And the beginning of the fall, I think there's a lot of deer feet in there too, because they would, back after the river, after the ice stopped running on the river, you know, people start go across and put in fish net. Some of them gets about 30 or 40 white fish overnight, you know, all white fish. You know, overnight they catch that much. The next couple of days, it's still about the same. Pretty soon started to thin down a little bit, little by little, it started to thin down. Pretty soon there was hardly any more white fish. You know. We started to catch sea fish from January. It was really good, that sea fish. Oh, it's nice, fat, big sea fish.
You catch lush in there too?
Catch lush and pike. You know, my dad used to have a fish trap 16 miles down here on the island. He used to catch all kinds of fish there. He used to catch trout, herring, lush, sheep fish, white fish. He'd catch all different kinds of fish in that trap. And it was really good, but I never did learn how to put in a fish trap. Winter time under the ice, I mean. Hildebrandt got one right now up there in Nolala. Eddie Hildebrandt. Mm-hmm.
The trap that your father put in, was that out of willows? And
all out of spruce and willows. Well, like they say, yeah, that they were... Anything you put iron in the water, you know, to say the fish don't like it, you know. So he was quite a bit superstitious about fishing. You know, if you used to bring some fish up, and they wouldn't pass it around for the first catch. They wouldn't pass that around overnight, you know. It stayed lived in the house overnight, not in the house, in the cache overnight. Next day they would pass it around. And then you catch some, you go to the fish trap, and then you come up. And then before you bring it in, inside your cache or refrigerator, somebody come and bite, well, that's fine. But the rest, you put it in there, that's got to be there overnight. That was some kind of superstitious. But my dad never used to do that. He never used to believe it, I guess. But he used to believe that there was black bear. You know, the black bear, there's some young girls never don't have to eat black bear. Because to give you bad luck, you see. And my dad used to tell me, well, it's kind of hard because during the winter, you know, it's hard to catch black bear because you don't track it. He said, you know, they hibernate early in the fall and that's all. And then in the fall time, you hunt around for it, and then pretty soon you don't even catch anything. You don't even see no sign of it. You can spend the days and days after hunting, looking around for black bear in the dense, you know, and you'll never catch it. So he was right.
Did he ever catch black bear in the dense? I
remember he caught one. Well, he used to catch one just about every season at the beginning of the fall. You know, just about one. But he had to work pretty hard for it to find one. You say just like you lost something in the woods that you're looking around for, you know. Well, I tried it too. I tried it, meet you quite a few times. I tried it. In fact, I used to try it every fall on the weekend here. As soon as the river stopped, then I go across and just start going hunting in the woods, look around for bear hole. I find a lot of old bear holes. I never ran across a bear in a hole yet, in his den yet. And this last couple of years, I finally give up. Well, my buddy Plasker say, well, I give up doing that now. He said, well, me too, I give up. I tell him, I wouldn't do it no more.
Well, when you catch a bear, is there... Or when somebody gets a bear, is there special ways that they treat it, or do they have a bear party, or do they share it?
No, but some guys catch a bear in the fall time, you know, when the fat is about putting that thick on it.
About a couple inches thick.
All if you catch a big one, it's about an inch and a half thick. Okay, the fat is all on the back, you know, and you just cut that out and put it away and then freeze it. And then you just put it away for a special time like a New Year time for the canvas toss. You put that away for that time.
So a person with that fat, when they come around the canvas, they sing to them about bear fat or something?
No, they never sing about it. They just throw it in the canvas toss and then the people all go to the community hall and then potlatch out the food. And then they cut this bear fat into strips and then pass it around to the people. Because it was very valuable. I mean, it was very valuable, you know. So that's why the people who used to like to hunt it very much, because that was about the richest food there was for just for the season, like in the fall season time, you know. But all the beaver is pretty good fat meat right now, and mostly any time.
So then that say the bear meat Do people still, some people still don't want young girls to eat it, or
It's still the same, but not around here, because nobody never gets bear around here in fall time. But back around Hoosley and Hughes, just a couple of girls from here that are married from back that Kaiko River, you know. They say they're like that. They say they never eat bear meat or touch bear meat. You know, what they catch in the fall time after the snowfall. Mm.
But when they get older, they can eat the bear meat thing?
Well, you don't have to get really older, you know. Just when they're in teenage, I believe. That's when they got it, I think. Because, mm-hmm. I know it was like that when some guys used to go out and catch bear in the fall time. Oh, it's really, really hard to go out and catch a bear in the fall time. Well, if you find the lot, this Hoosley people, you know, they catch somewhere from the whole village would catch about 29 or 30 bears every year. You know, but them guys know the bear dens where they are year after year. You know, and then they just go around it, and then they're lucky they get some in them dens. Well, me and Plasco, we used to do that, you know. We used to go across there and spot all the bear dens across the over on the other side. I mean, not too far from the river. We used to go around and check them all. Nothing. Gee, at the end of it, we used to get mad. You know, because there's nothing in those dams. So we thought we might as well quit.
So would you hunt for something else then instead of bear? And
you go hunt moose, yeah. You go hunting moose then. Well, now they got the moose season open in the fall, once in the fall, and once in March now.
Does that work out better now for people?
It seems like it works. It works pretty good now. Because when I had, when all my kids, well, right now all my boys with me, but they never eat as much because I never cooked that much for them. But one moose wasn't enough for me. For my family, you know, it would last somewhere around February or January, and I had to go out and kill another moose in order to make out through the season, you know, through the year. But during the summer, it's pretty easy because you get some fresh fish mostly anytime you want, and you could go kill a few ducks if you want to, you know.
So did your wife used to really cut a lot of fish?
Oh yeah, my wife would cut fish all day long as there was fish on the table or on the beach that to be cut. She won't leave there till she get through cutting, till there's no more fish to cut.
So did you dry a lot of fish?
We used to dry quite a bit of fish, you know. That's how I got this smokehouse in that place. Outdoors, I fixed up a place for her so the fish could be out of the rain, you know. And then he could take a dry little, I mean, get pretty good sun dry out of it.
So when you dry that fish, did you dry it for dogs too? Or was
well, most. Mostly all for ourselves. We dry some demos we treat as good as we can, you know, the most we put away for ourselves. We try to keep the rain away from it and put it in a smokehouse and not too much smoke on it. So I told about 3 or 4 years ago, I guess, I found out it was getting too much smoke on my fish. So I told my wife, we're going to use mostly heat this summer. We'll try it that way. See if it'll see if the fish won't have too much smoke taste in it. So I went across and got some dry poles, willows. You know, we use cottonwood to smoke our fish, but those ones they never go out 24 hours a day. You can leave it in the smokehouse and then. It's just smoke. I found out there's too much smoke, then it just gives you stomach ache if there's too much smoke on it. So I thought it'd be better if you throw some heat on, some kind of heat on it too. Well, we try it that way, but it don't seem any different, you know. The only thing, your fish are a little bit lighter than a dark color on it when you got the heat on, mostly.
On working with fish and trying different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm planning to do that this year for next year's potlatch.
Will you stay out at fish camp, or you'll be bringing it back here?
I'll be out fish camp maybe, because I got a nice big smokehouse down there too. As long as you're at the camp, you could take care of your fish much better too, and if you stay with it, you know. You know.
Did you ever fish commercial?
Mm-hmm.
You had commercial license too?
Yeah. That's the one that was, everybody was kind of didn't understand it, you know, when they first come out the commercial fishing license. People didn't understand it too well. That's why there's only 11 commercial fishing license in town. And only 11 people got commercial fishing license. Because people didn't understand it too well. You know, we used to go catch fish anytime we want to and go kill. Fish anytime we want, night or Sunday or Saturday or the whole week or the whole summer long. But soon the commercial fishermen's fishing came in, then you had to go by so many hours a week, a day. Not a day, just by a week, you know. Well, you had three days of openings in a week, and then 3 days close in a week. No, four days opening in a week. And 3 days close. Like it would be close on Wednesday, Friday and Saturday and Sunday. That's for a commercial fishing. And then you try to put it down for a subsistence. We couldn't have no subsistence fishing in during that time too. Now, if it's just closed, everything is just closed. You gotta shut down your wheel, you gotta put your fish net, you gotta pull your fish net up. Probably Tuesday morning or Tuesday night, whenever the closure is, you know, till the next morning about six o'clock, then you could put in your net again.
So what did people think about that when that
happened? Well, people didn't like it, but the reason why the fishing game was doing it, so there'd be some fish go by for the other people along the river, up the river, you know. And I believe there must be a little bit harder than that down lower, where they're catching more fish, you know. I think they got shorter. Well, up further as you go past Galena, I think it's 6 days a week. And then from Tanana on up is north. It's just 5 days, I mean 6-7 days a week, it's open, you know, they got no closing days, you know. but them guys catch more king salmon than we catch down here. I don't know how. Like up there at Rampart, them guys, they catch 80 and 90 pound king salmon. And the biggest king salmon we catch around here is about 54 or 60 pounds. The biggest king salmon we catch around here. And then for us up here around Rampart, you catch a really big king salmon. Well, I met a guy there, he was telling me that too. He said, you guys catch all the little ones, we catch all the big ones up here.
Yeah. Well, when they started making commercial license, how did they explain to people, you know, about it? How did people find out about commercial license?
Well, nobody didn't find out till a guy came in here and wanted to buy some fish. You know, well, back for me, there was a guy that came in and wanted to buy some egg roll. So, you know, I had not anything to do. There was only one fish wheel in this town. My brother, Artie, had fish wheel. And, you know, and I was still using dogs at that time. So I told my wife, well, I have to get a fish wheel up there in the creek. I don't want to set it up, you know. It was all ready to set up. I said, well, I don't want to put up my fish wheel. I said, well, I'll buy that fish from my brother. 5 cents a fish. And then we could get enough fish for our dogs that way. Just give them a chance to make a little money. And he said, all right. So he had fish wheel up here at up here about a mile and a half. My brother had fish wheel up here. Well, I was buying fish for him. Pretty soon the guy came in, he wanted to buy some egg roll. Well, he asked me if I could be a buyer for him. I said, okay. Well, I wanted to help people, you know, to sell some fish. Pretty soon people started putting in more nets. And then I put out my wheel. My wheel is all ready, but I just left it in the creek. I put out my wheel and started to give those guys, give to other people a chance to sell some egg rolls, you know. But then I had to have a commercial fishing license in order to be a buyer, you know. I didn't know.
That.
So, well, this guy that I was buying Rofer told me that. He said, you got to have a commercial fishing license. And that was in 74, you know. And then, I told him, do I have a license? He said, yeah, you got to have a license in order to be a buyer. He said, well, how am I going to get it? I'll get it for you. He said, okay. So next time he came down, and then he brought me a form, then I filled it out. And then he brought down my commercial fishing license. Well, that's where I helped myself. And then year after that, I think my wife wanted one too. You know. So I said, go ahead, buy one. So we'll have two, you know. Well, the rest of the people that didn't understand it. And I tried to explain to them, but you know, they didn't understand it. Because that was only the chance that you had to buy commercial fishing license from the state at that time. You know. You can renew it now. Every year you can renew your license, all right. But you get one as permanent. Well, I got one permanent, and because I got my commercial fishing license, and then how I got it was I was buying eggs for this guy. So that puts me up to they were going by points. Then I got 13 points. And the highest you could go was 10, you know. So my wife got 8 points, and he got commercial fishing license. Other people got 6 points and 8. Some got 10 points, but it was no problem for them to get the commercial fishing license. By points, I didn't understand what they meant by points, you know, but the. That's the way it came on my commercial fishing license. I had 13 points, you know. So they just gave me a permanent commercial fishing license. All I had to do is renew it every year, that's all. Mm-hmm.
So the commercial license then, did the state give them free or did you have to buy them?
You have to buy them. You have to buy $20 for each commercial fishing license. It costs $20 to renew it every year, and $20 for your boat. Boat license and the $5 fee you got to pay for.
If somebody wants to sell their license, they get a lot more than that, huh?
Oh, you could sell your commercial fishing license if you want.
So, what kind of prices do people say last year? Did anyone sell commercial fishing license?
No, nobody wanted to sell their. Well, I got two of them, and I didn't want to sell them. I could sell them for $10,000 my commercial fishing license if I want to.
So who was the fish buyer that came down here? Was he from the lotto? Or?
No, he was from Ruby. Mm-hmm. You know, he was just he wasn't the buyer. He just wanted to buy some roe. You know, mm-hmm. Because little by little the Japanese was buying them, I guess, at that time. You know, so they thought it was. And it was a good pay, $1.30 a pound, I think. No. 85 cents a pound, the fish roe, you know. And they thought it was a good pay, you know. Well, when I was growing up, we used to sell some dry fish. 6 cents a pound for sun dry, 8 cents a pound for smoked fish, you know. Then you had to put a tons and tons of fish before you could make any money or get enough for winter supply of food. And they take a lot of work. I've counted, you know. You got to handle that fish 7 different times before you get rid of it.
What are the times you handle it?
Okay, you go to the fish wheel in the morning, then you take it out your fish wheel. Okay, you go to the shore and then you load it back on your table, you know, and cut. Or maybe you just throw it in some tub. You throw it in the tub and then you handle it twice again. You got to go pick them up again and put it on your table and then cut it. You cut it and then you throw it in your container. And from there you take it to your fish rack and then you got to hang it up. And then you hang it up and then you let it sit for a day and then you got to turn them around, you know. So it kind of dry on both sides. Okay, then that's the last time you touch it is when you turn it around. But you have to bring it to the smokehouse. Then you got to handle it extra 2 more times, you know.
That's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you used to sell it for that 6 cents or 8 cents a pound, who would buy it?
Well, the trader, like the guy, like I told you, this man, Adolf Miller, used to be a trader here. You know, he was the one that used to buy some fish, and he used to buy all the fish he can get a hold of. Even though he had enough fish, he'd buy some more. Just that, you know, he was just a man that tried to help the natives too. Pretty soon, it took him a year or two before he got rid of them. You know, but
he sell them back to people who run out, or
he does. He does. Yeah, he does sell it back to the people who ever run out, but very little profit. And then some of it goes to, like, around Fairbanks or some other cities he send it to, you know, and then sell them around there.
Was he a big help to the village having a store here?
He was a big help to the village. He was really a big help to the village.
What kind of ways?
A big part.
In what kind of ways was he help? Like, if there wasn't a store, how would it have been?
Well, if there wasn't a store, we had to go to Nolado or Unalakleet to get our groceries. Well, after he died, we did that. After he died, we had to go to Nolado, we had to go to Kaikuk, or to Unalakleet to get our groceries, because there was no store here for quite a long time after he died. Hmm.
So what year was that, the store that he died?
He died in 1937.
So when was the next time you had a store here in California?
Well, we had this store. Well, his store was closed after he died. And then it was just gradually going down, you know. The store was going down. Well, he did not have any relatives. That was the worst part of it, you know. He did not have any relatives. And nobody to back up that store. Sort of people that he was buying groceries from outside was just taking over, just going in there and grabbing, you know. And then that way the store was going down. But if he had some relatives that would close that place as soon as he died and have everything all straightened out according by the law, you know, these guys wouldn't come in and do the grabbing from out there, you know, the guys that he was buying groceries from.
So people buy their whole winter outfit there and they bought everything at the store?
Okay, the way this guy used to do it, the way, I mean, all the traders were doing it. In the fall time, we'd go out a trapping. Well, this trader would give you all the groceries you want, up to us so much, you know, whatever will take you till December. You know, you get everything, like, well, everything, not practically everything, mostly all dry stuff, you know. And then whatever fur you catch, you bring it back to him, and then he give you the price for it, and then you pay your bill, whatever you get the groceries for. Okay, now it just continue on like that all winter long, back and forth trading in for groceries for whatever you catch. And then in the summertime, then you get the same way for the fish. You know, do the same thing over and over, back and forth for the fish. During the summertime. Well, that we was getting along pretty good till we had no more store, you know.
When there was no more store, then what happened? Did people have to pay cash? Or did they
you had to pay cash for your groceries. Nobody was getting a welfare or food stamp or get no help from government. Well, then I thought, then the guys were building a airport back here. That was in 65, I think. Yeah, 66 and 65. The guys were building airport and they had no place to stay. You know, they had some equipment and a lot of stuff. So we rent out our community hall to these guys that were making the airport back here. The city got $500 for it. So we decided to start a store with that. You know, at $500, that was quite a bit of money that time. And nobody didn't want to keep it in their house, so I told my wife, well, let's try it. Let's put it in our house, and then we'll just buy some groceries. And then we'll call it a co-op. They said we'll make it a co-op. You know, so I was working at that place just like I own it, you know. I put my hours into that place, and so as my wife was doing ordering and things like that, and pretty soon got pretty well acquainted with the wholesale stores, you know, like in Seattle and Fairbanks and Anchorage. Then we started order groceries for them, you know. And then we paid him back up, and then it was just going back and forth like that. Pretty soon it came up to $4,000. And then the people decided to move it out, you know, because we were getting only 5% out of it, you know, and all the work that we were putting into it. So they did move it out, and then they put the, we didn't have any place to put it. So they started up there in that little house beside the co-op. This little frame building there. Okay, the Catholic Church had that land there, but they just turned it over back to the city. So they gave this house as for a little co-op store to start out with. And pretty soon the CDC come in and want to supply them, you know, give them CDC.
Oh.
Want to come in and supply them, give them money, and get enough groceries for the winter. So they try that too. And then they got quite a bit of groceries at that time, you know. Well, it was $4,000 clear when it left us, you know. So I decided, well, I was so used to the store, so I told my wife, let's start a little to the store, just a snack and candy, Coke, and then I bought a pool table. And then I built another house. And then I started in there. And I started doing my own business there. Besides, I was working up here, you know. Then we started ordering our own groceries then from the wholesale store in Seattle. And so that's why I don't have to go. But I don't have no time to go to other villages and get my groceries. So we get all our groceries all in one stock in the fall time and in the springtime. Now it's getting along pretty good, and then we get a little money ahead, and then we start this little business there. Now I was enjoying it pretty much, but it was giving me too much bad time, and my kids don't want to take care of the store, and every time they go there, something's missing, you know. So I thought, well, it started to go down gradually, so I told my wife, let's shut it down. I told them, let's shut it down. It was doing pretty good there for a while. For about 2 years, it went pretty good, and our store was building up because my wife learned how to order some stuff, and she went to school in Seattle, you know, for a couple of weeks.
Was that about Anika?
Anika, yeah. He took her there and teach her how to do some business, you know. Then she came back, and then we held the store for about 4 or 5 years, and then I gradually went back down again, you know. Then I told Miss Shelley, we still got quite a bit of stuff in there yet right now.
Yeah. You know. What kind of things do you have left in the store?
Oh, we got a lot of clothes. And some little items like toys. We used to get a whole bunch of toys for Christmas. The guys used to send it from us from North Star Brewery. Used to send us some stuff like that, you know. And some other outfit used to send us some stuff. Used to send it on credit, you know. And then we paid them up. I continue on like that for a while. Pretty soon the co-op started to build up a little bit better again. And now it's standing pretty good right now. They got good, well, they had a hard time to get guys to take care of it, managing the place, you know. And now they got one of the young boys running it now. And he's doing pretty good keeping it, but only thing, people would break in there sometimes and get a lot of stuff in there, because there's nobody in there all the time, you know, at night. And you got it open 6 days a week, 5 hours a day.
So is it owned by the city?
It's owned by the city now. It's we used to get dividends back from there too. And
so everybody would?
Yeah, everybody would get about $10 or $15 dividends from the store, you know. Mm-hmm. Just about around Christmas time. But now they don't do it anymore. Now they start doing it now. I guess they own it now. Because they got I don't know how much they got. They got $40,000 loan. Now they just pay it up. They must be, well, first time I went to their meeting last month, and they said they were $85,000 in that holding in that store now, you know. So that $85,000 could go mighty long ways, you know. If they just order some stuff with that much money, and then that's what the stock they got in there right now, you know. And now it's keeping the whole village going right now. Sometimes there's a well, they'd get about maybe 4 or 5 tons every month here now to keep up supply for the people, you know.
How do they bring that in?
It's come to fly in by plane. And then I tell them not to order too much at one time, because the planes that, you know, just order a little at a time, and then that way, every time the main plane come down, they bring down some stuff, you know. from Galena. Of course, there's no problem in Galena because they used a big cargo plane not to bring in the supply, but our field is so small. But they had to use only those 207 to bring down the supply, and they bring down somewhere around 5,000 or 6,000 pounds. And that's about all they're.
So do they buy the food right from Galena, or they order it from Fairbanks?
They order it from Fairbanks, but it comes into Galena, you know, by big cargo plane. And then they just keep shipping it down little at a time.
Well, okay, so you had your own store. When did you start working for the school?
I started work in the school. Well, I worked 12 years for the BIA. The BIA had the school here then. And then I was the principal selected me that time to be a custodian, you know, for the school. And I was working 4 hours a day then. 4 hours a day wasn't enough, so I used to go out trapping in the mornings. And I'd get up about 6 o'clock in the morning, and then I'd go out trap and then come back at lunch hour and start in working.
How far would you go out to trap?
I'd go out, sometimes I'd go out 8 or 10 miles out this way. You know, but I was using dogs. And then pretty soon there was a snow machine. Came up the river, and they were just kind of demonstrating it, Polaris. They were demonstrating it. And when they went by here, I told my wife, I'm going to buy one next year. And I said, I'm going to buy one. I said, oh. Well, he didn't say all right, but I put down money down on it right there, you know.
I don't want.